The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into ESPN FC. Kay Murray, Craig Burley and Stevie Nicol here with you in the studio. Later on, we'll be hearing from Jan Agafyortov. He's been speaking to Julian Nagelsmann. We'll also have Gemma Soler with us to talk Griezmann and Barcelona. But first, let's look back on the USA's 0-0 draw with El Salvador in World Cup qualifying. It's the first match of the octagonal round of CONCACAF World Cup qualifying. And to look back on everything that went down, here's Sebastian Salazar and Hercules Gomez.
Thank you very much, Kay. All right, Herc, a million ways to break down this first match of the qualifying cycle for the U.S. Let's start first by analyzing not the performance, but the result itself. A scoreless draw away against El Salvador in the first of three. Are you satisfied with it?
Satisfied wouldn't be necessarily the word. It's acceptable, right? It's this road formula. You steal away and you secure points at home. So if we're going by that formula off a team that didn't qualify last World Cup because they failed to secure points at home, because they failed to steal points away, then yeah, by that standard, I wouldn't say satisfied, but it's an acceptable result. So yeah, acceptable.
I mean, isn't this the most talented generation of U.S. players ever? Isn't it also the most accomplished at club level of all time? At some point, don't we have to up the expectations a little bit?
Yeah.
Let's be honest. As much credit as we want to give
club level?
Yes, at club level, by far. That's not even up for debate. Let's give Hugo Perez and El Salvador all the credit that you want. There's not a single player, Herc, in that team that's getting anywhere near the U.S. 11, the U.S. 18, the U.S. 26 for these games. I mean, you are so obsessed with where guys play. You wanted Ethan Horvath, who hardly plays, to start over Matt Turner. El Salvador has zero players playing top-flight football in Europe. Not top-five league football, top-flight football in Europe. When you have such a decided advantage as the U.S. does in talent there, shouldn't the expectation be to win? If not with that kind of advantage, when will it be to win?
Well, you just said it there. Individual, club. What have they done collectively as a group, performance-wise, that you would say, you know what, they leave me at ease, and I think they can cruise through CONCACAF qualifying, which no team does, not even Mexico. Mexico's won once in the last five World Cup cycles. They finished first place one time, and that's the most dominant team in this region. Now, when you look at these club players who play at very good clubs, they've not done anything at the national team level. No Christian Pulisic, no Zach Steffen. They go into a World Cup qualifier in El Salvador where you can see the nerves got to them. There was only two players with World Cup qualifying experience. One is Tim Ream. The other one is DeAndre Yedlin, who was probably the worst on the field yesterday. You can see these players collectively aren't great. They're a bunch of individuals. And when you look at this summer, Seb, when you look at the CONCACAF Nations League finals, Honduras, very shaky game they go through, play Mexico, an even shakier game that they managed to pull out. Then go off to the Gold Cup where they didn't convince at all. This team left no sensation in me where I thought, you know what, they can easily go into El Salvador and get a good result. A result that's 3 points or more. Certainly not a 9-point week like many of the players are talking about. I think this team is a good bunch of individuals, but they've not been a good team.
You mentioned the collective performance. You mentioned some of the individual performances. Let's be honest. The stars in this game didn't play like stars. Weston McKennie didn't play like a Juventus player. Sergiño Dest didn't look like a Barcelona player playing against CONCACAF competition. I mean, that's a really big concern. Those performances weren't there. What about the performance of the manager? What do we think of what Greg Berhalter did? Herc, there were some big decisions in this game. Do you feel like he got them right in that 11?
I don't know about the decisions for the 11 because at the end you got that point result. But as far as the management, I was really surprised at the approach of the U.S. men's national team. It's supposed to be a team that's on the front foot that pressures and puts teams into precarious situations to give up the ball so that you can use your transition game and attack. That wasn't there. And then you speak about that midfield. Tyler Adams plays at Leipzig. Weston McKennie plays at Juventus. You had Brendan Aaronson in that midfield who was a surprise. And they never had the ball. It was the center backs had it or the outside backs had it, and all of a sudden it was Route 1 football. So Josh Sargent was really non-existent, had one of his worst games that I can recall in recent memory. A Giovanni Reyna that was more an individualist with Conrad De La Fuente as well. Conrad De La Fuente, very much a predictable player in this game. Always starting on the left-hand side, cutting into his right. Salvadorian defense knew exactly what he was going to do. It was very predictable a performance, but you talk about the talent level here. It was never on display because they never got a chance. They lost possession at ease. We can give Hugo Perez and this El Salvadorian team a lot of credit, but they did it with just being disciplined tactically. They did it with pretty much crowd support. They did it with the elements, the field, the heat, what made you, that is CONCACAF, but it was very easy. When it talk about these individual performances from the U.S. men's national team, just weren't there. I could maybe point one or two that showed us flashes, but in general, as a whole, it was a very poor performance.
Yeah, something else that's disappointing is I feel like the U.S. got off to a good start. And yet whatever advantage they had in those first 15 or 20 minutes when there were some chances against El Salvador, they never seemed to get it back. I don't know if that's Hugo Perez getting one over on Greg Berhalter or if that's just an adjustment that happens on the field. But either way, U.S. had an advantage early on, didn't capitalize on it, but never regained that advantage through the rest of the game. Let's look ahead then to Sunday, Herc, the match against Canada. Is it now a must-win coming off this result?
It was always a must-win because it's a home game. It's a home game versus a Canadian team that's on the up because they feel good about themselves, because they've got a lot of young talent coming through the pipeline, because they got a lot of players playing in Europe, because it's a different side of Canada that we've never seen. So it was always going to be a must-win game. Now, you drop points if you're thinking about that 9-point week away in El Salvador, absolutely, because at home you're supposed to secure the 3 points. And then after that, it's San Pedro Sula, where you know the U.S. men's national team has always suffered. I've been there personally. It's not an easy venue to play in. Honduras is one of those teams that you never know what kind of team you're going to get. It's very Jekyll and Hyde. They've got a lot of players that can hurt you in transition. But this Canadian team, they could definitely hurt you. They've done it before. For all these 4-0, 5-0, 6-0 results that you've had against Canada in the past, it's not the same Canadian team. This Gold Cup, they completely dominated you, and yet you got the win. It's wins like that that paper over the cracks that have some of the fan base really drinking the Kool-Aid and believing this team is really better than it is. They've shown a lot of times in competitive games that they've not been up to the snuff. They get the results, which is great, I guess, but if Greg Berhalter and this new regime comes in and says we're going to play a very proactive possession-based game, we're going to be on the front foot, we're going to high press, we're going to be dominant 9-point weeks, we've not seen that. We've not seen that not only against El Salvador, but we didn't see this the whole summer. And everybody tells you that hasn't been the case. They're lying to you. They got the results. That is great. But they got the results the way of the old U.S. men's national teams, of being very difficult to play against, difficult to break down, of countering, of being dependent on set pieces, that fight, that spirit. They got it that way, not the way that we're being sold.
Herc, the team said a 9-point week. What did you say? Five?
I said five. I said five because it's not that easy. And these players have never played. And you saw Sergiño Dest. Sergiño Dest didn't look like a Barcelona player. Sergiño Dest looked like Timothy Chandler and San Pedro Sula in 2013 in that World Cup qualifying campaign. This is a different animal. And say what you will, it's not a billiards table they're playing on. These are difficult elements. The grass is up to your knees. It's very humid. It's very hot. The fan base is on top of you. The opponent is suffocating. The football, the brand, is oftentimes very physical. It's not ideal or conducive to play like this beautiful football that the fan base all of a sudden expects. Now, I know what you're saying. These players play the Champions League. How difficult can CONCACAF be? Well, there you go.
Yeah, somewhere, our good friend Craig Burley is playing a very small violin for all your CONCACAF troubles. Here's a look at the table through match day one of qualifying. Mexico, the only team to win. They pick up a 2-1 victory over Jamaica. All the other three matches end in a draw. U.S., El Salvador, Honduras, and Canada, and Panama, and Costa Rica. Okay, back to you.
Thanks, guys. We will hear more from Seb and Herc later. But for a lot more on that game, Jeff Carlisle's latest article is up on ESPN.com. He was there for all the action and all the talk, too.
Do you know, it was probably the wrong type of grass.
Oh, it was Bermuda, wasn't it?
The blades of grass were just too thick.
They thought they were in Bermuda and playing in.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. It was not a good night for Spain against Sweden in World Cup qualifying. Paper saying here, Lucho, we have a problem, a big blunder on the road to the World Cup. You must remember that only group winners are assured of a place in Qatar. So top two meetings like Spain and Sweden's was have become even more important. And the result, the 2-1 win to Sweden, means that Spain lose hold of top spot in their group. Gemma Soler joining us now to talk about everything that we saw. So Gemma, we've seen the reaction in the papers in Spain. Are there concerns back in Spain about this result?
Hola, Kay. Hello. Yeah, definitely. There are a lot of concerns. It has left many, many doubts. This Spain, it's probably the worst game in Luis Enrique era. And there is a lot of criticism here in Spain because there were a lot of problems, especially in the defending line. Eric Garcia, this new Barcelona central defender, is again giving signals that sometimes he cannot play there with when he's got a lot of pressure. Also, this weak defending line, a lot of loss of the ball, and they were quite previsible in the forward line, so not able to create game. The coach didn't give any kind of solutions, so there is a lot of concerns. Everyone here in Spain is starting to talk about the maybe having to go to the playoff, and it's a big thing here because, you know, it's the first loss in a World Cup qualifying since 1993, so it's a big thing.
Yeah, that had been a wonderful run. 66 game unbeaten run, as Gemma said, in World Cup qualifying there. It's hard to know what you're going to get from Spain. We saw that in the Euros.
Well, in some sense, it's easy to know what you're going to get. You're going to get lots of possession. I think the end product is the difficult part to understand if they're going to wall up a team by four or five, or whether they're going to struggle in front of goal and defend poorly, like Gemma said, and give up a couple against it. You know, a hard-working, decent Swedish side. Now, look, Sweden have got a game in hand as well. The playoffs were mentioned there, and you would think, yeah, Spain will go to the playoffs at worst and they'll rumble through. You've only got to remember back to Italy. Pre-2018 World Cup, got to the playoffs against Sweden, went out. Disaster for them. So it's you can't take that chance. Well, you don't have a choice, do you? But what I'm saying is you don't just think, oh, we'll finish second, we'll get in the playoffs and we'll go through, because that's what Italy thought. So much work to be done, but that looks like where they're heading.
I think the worrying thing would not be that they've lost this. I mean, let's be honest. If you're complaining about losing one game in 66, then you're a little bit nitpicking. I think the problem they have is that he can't make many changes to make it better, if any. You know, do they have anybody better than Laporte and Garcia defensively? I don't really think they have. And who else can they put in up front to put the ball in the back of the net? They've got what they've got. The midfield does its job. It gets the possession to the front players, but the front players can't take advantage of it, and you lose goals. So I'm not quite sure what they can do to change this, because the squad they have, the 11 they have to start, is pretty much what most people would play.
Obviously, they were without Pedri, Gemma, but that one player won't make that much of a difference. He did need that rest. But, I mean, it is a new era in this Spanish national side. Is there any positivity going forward?
Well, probably is that, Kay, thinking that Pedri, Dani Olmo, Oyarzabal, this new generation, these youngsters, that they give sparkle to the game. Pedri is very much reliable. But of course, you cannot depend on an 18, 20, 21 years old player. That's what Spain is sticking on to. Those four games are going to be four finals, as the topic says. So they are just thinking about Georgia, this new game, and thinking that probably on the next FIFA window they will be having these young guys that gives such a lot to Spain, this Pedri, Oyarzabal, Dani Olmo. Of course, they are also thinking on Ansu Fati.
Yeah, and of course, when we do see Spain, as we said, it can be quite unpredictable. Maybe it will be a high-scoring game next time. These are the papers reacting to Griezmann going back to Atletico. Now, this was a big surprise in the final day of the transfer window. It had been talked about early on in the transfer window, but then it did come. And at that point, it wasn't expected, Gemma. How was this taken back in Barcelona?
It wasn't expected at all. We knew that Griezmann could be out, but not 1 minute before the end of the deadline of the transfer market. So it was very shocking, very crazy. We didn't hear that many rumors about Luke de Jong. We know Ronald Koeman was asking for a striker every day in every press conference, but we were not expecting this at all. Barcelona is on shock. They have still not recovered from Messi's departure. So the conclusion here is that they have changed 70% of goals and happiness for less than $300 million. So is it worth it? We will see, but it's a time of crisis. They don't have money, so it's what they had to do. They have another player leaving, Miralem Pjanic, just earlier today. We know he's joining Besiktas on a loan. So we will see. But the forward line now today in Barcelona would be Braithwaite, De Jong and Memphis. He's got a good start, Memphis Depay, but we will see what he can do at the Camp Nou.
It's a good point, isn't it? Memphis has obviously hit the ground running there, but when you say Luke de Jong...
When I saw that headline in the paper, and I mean, when I first looked up, it said adios, right? When I first looked up, I thought it said idiots. And kind of that's how you would describe the way this club has been run, Barcelona, recently. Luke de Jong. I mean, what, there's a Dutch connection? Was that? Can I throw any other positive angle on this? You know, 10 goals and... Are thereabouts in two seasons at Sevilla, a failed time at Newcastle United. Yeah, he has linked up with Depay before. Well, but this is not a Barcelona standard, is it? It was almost felt like when Koeman knew that the Griezmann thing was last minute was gone, just had to get somebody in. Just had to get a body in. That's all it is. Just a body coming in. It's not Barcelona quality. I mean, in all fairness, neither's Martin Brathwaite. The only one who's got any real talent there is Memphis Depay.
Is anybody bothered at Barcelona? And I'm talking about the fans now more than anything, that Griezmann's gone? Because I don't get the impression they could care less.
It's an interesting question, actually, that Stevie poses there, Gemma. Are the Barcelona fans upset at losing Griezmann, or are they OK with it?
Some of them, they are, even if it's not that much fair, because in the last games, he was shouted out because they weren't happy with those only three games of La Liga. The fans shouted him. They were not happy with their performance. And it's true that he was the player with the biggest salary in the locker room, and he did any kind of impact in these three games and neither in the two seasons previous. But of course, if you make the change, you are giving for free a player who you paid more than $160 million to one of your competitors, who is the defending champion in La Liga. So you did that in 2013 with David Villa, Atletico won. You did that last year with Luis Suarez, Atletico won. And they were already probably the best squad in La Liga, and you are giving it almost for free. We know they will have to pay 40 million maybe in 2 years, but they are quite disappointed, not because of the Griezmann thing, but for all the conjunction of elements.
Yeah, and obviously time will tell how it all plays out for both Atleti and Barcelona. But always great to get your insight, Gemma Soler. If you would like more talk on this very topic, make sure to download the latest Gab and Jules podcast this week. However, Gab is joined by Stuart Robson.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
There's been so much change at Bayern Munich this past off-season. A new coach coming in from Leipzig in the form of Julian Nagelsmann, just 34 years old. Jan Agafyatov had the pleasure of sitting down with him.
What's the difference between Nagelsmann, Guardiola, Tuchel, Klopp? What's your philosophy, if you may put that into a short kind of few sentences?
That's not that easy, but to compare it with other managers, it's not that easy. But at the end, I love to have a good structure in ball possession. I think a good structure in ball possession to have good positions is always important for counter-pressing. I like to attack the opponents very early, try to have good ball-winning moments in the opponent's half, to have short way to the opponent's goal, and try to score goals. To play a fast and attacking offensive soccer would be a good sentence to describe my philosophy.
Can you tell us about the balance between the system and the players you have available, or the players you have available creating that system? Where is the balance?
I think it's important to know which club do you train. It was a bit different in Hoffenheim because, as I mentioned, we nearly get relegated, so the system were more important than each player from the beginning. And then when the players get used to the system and get used to the content, then the importance of the players grow each day, you know. And if you're a manager at Bayern Munich, the players are all world class. They won a lot of titles. They are very experienced. They are so talented. So at the end, a single player at Bayern Munich is more important than any system. You have to talk about their qualities. You have to do a good relationship with them, many speeches, and try to give them a good feeling. And then they're hungry enough to learn new things. They're hungry enough to learn new systems. But at the end, the individual player is more important than a system. If you train a world-class team, it's always about that.
You're training Robert Lewandowski, the best striker in the world, just scored 41 goals in the Bundesliga, and your job is to make him even better. How do you do that?
The most important topic is that he could hold his level. I think that's more important than to make him better. I think better is not possible, not really possible. But Levy's kind of player who always listen to you, always listen to the plan, always listen to your ideas and try to do and try to adapt a little bit. He's also a player who's very important, not only for scoring goals, also important for ball possession. And he tried to always find the best solution in any situation, try to go between the defense lines, try to find spaces and create chances for his teammates as well. So at the end, he tried to be a better player than last season because he's hungry. And then it's always about working together, discuss together, discuss about different situations, ask him when he feel comfortable and in which situations he do not feel that comfortable. At the end, he's so hungry, he always want to be a better player. But I think if he could hold his level, I'm really, really happy.
And you are, of course, at the most hungry team in Germany, winning titles for fun. I was there in Dortmund when you won your first title, and now you're going to go out in the Champions League. And is there also a part of frustration when you see now in the transfer window that all the money is flying around, and with all due respect, you were trying hard to find finances to get one of your former players, Sabitzer from RB Leipzig, a great player, but still not the amount that everybody else throws out?
Yeah, we it's not frustrating because we know the situation in Germany, we know the situation with the pandemic, we know the situation and the roots with the DFL and the Bundesliga, we know about taxes in Germany. So at the end, there are many topics which make it a bit more complicated than for clubs in England or in France or in Spain. But if you say, yes, I want to do a job in the Bundesliga, you know these kind of stuff. So it's not frustrating. You have to try to work with it. You have to find creative solutions. You have to be clever on the transfer market. You have to find good and talented players who are not that expensive. And you have to try to develop them to one of the best players in the world.
What's your directly plan to get the full potential out of Leroy Sané?
work with him, just work with him. I think the perfect plan is not to talk about him, do not have 100 face-to-face meetings. I think the most important topic is to show him things where he's very good and to show and discuss things what he should avoid in the future. I think he gets used to his to the situations when he play on the right wing. He gets used to the situations when he play on the left wing. And I think important is that he knows about his qualities and his special qualities, and it's also important to know every detail about the things he do not that good. You know, that's important because you try to you can work on the things you do not good, but it's also a good solution to try to avoid these things and try to find more spaces when you have the best quality on the pitch. And I think the most important topic to bring the best performance out of him is to work with him and not to talk about him.
And Salihamidžić had said on a Double Pass, the program at Sport One, he said, "You are following Erling Haaland closely." Rummenigge said today, Wednesday, he said that we are afraid that he will go away from the Bundesliga. Will you keep flirting with him?
It's always important for the Bundesliga to have the best strikers in the Bundesliga. We have Robert Lewandowski. I think he's the best striker in the world. We're happy about it to have him here, and it's better for me as a manager and as a coach to talk about my forward and not to talk about forwards of other clubs. But you know, by your own, Erling Haaland is brilliant. He's brilliant for the Bundesliga. He scored a lot of goals, but I'm very happy to have the best forward in my squad, and let's talk about Robert Lewandowski.
Nice interview, Jan. You tried there at the end. All credit to you for that. What stood out to you most from speaking to him?
How honest he was. He is a very likable person. I've known him for many years since he was at Hoffenheim, and I'm asking also that when he went into that Bayern dressing room with the Champions League winners and the World Cup winners, how was his feeling? And he said, "I was very nervous. So I came in there and tried to look for someone's eyes to try to get a reaction, to kind of adjust to that dressing room." So a 34-year-old that you can feel have the communication skill to talk to the new generation. I think that is what I summarized from this talk with Julian Nagelsmann.
Yeah, because in the nicest way, it was a very long interview, so we had to cut it down for the show. But you did mention 34 years old, Jan. Now, he has had success in those years that he's been managing, but 34 years old, to walk into that dressing room with players of that ilk, what makes you believe that they'll listen to him and that they will take on board what he says?
I will take you some years back, Kay, and I'll talk about a bit before, but my friend who is the head of sport at Hoffenheim, he told me when Julian Nagelsmann was 26 at the time, and then Alex Rosén said, "I got this guy training as a manager or a coach for the youth team, and this will be one of the best coaches in the world." And I say, why? Because he is so good at communication, so many ideas. The players love to play for him. And I think that he's come to Bayern at the right time, but timing is one thing, winning title is something else. And like I said in the interview, I was there in Dortmund. And even if that was only for Bayern, the Super Cup, that was his first title. And he has to win titles. And so far, he's starting off very well. And I think that the way he explained Leroy Sané, I think that shows you that this is a man manager. He wants to go into the players and he wants to come closer to them. And I think that when we compare it with me, Craig, Stevie and everybody else, we had another generation of coaches. And I think that this is the kind of coach that can take Bayern to the next step. But it's a tough situation for them because they are struggling to get Sabitzer when all the other teams are buying world stars.
It's interesting you mentioned Sané and had him talking about that. We were on that game the other day, Stevie, when Musiala came in for Sané, but then he got the reaction from Sané with the goals. And so it looks so far so good that he's getting that right, the man management, in knowing how to deal with these stars.
Yeah, I think the key thing that Jan said there is that the new generation of players, they open up to a guy like that. I mean, listen, he's no Bill Belichick. I mean, let's face it, he can talk. And he's very convincing. And when you can talk that much and be as convincing every time you open your mouth, because every time I've heard them, I want to listen. I understand what he's saying. And you want to, and you understand why you want to play with him. So he may be 34, but the point is, he's perfect for the generation of players now, and he can still handle the older guys, then he's perfect, as I said.
I can understand the trepidation that he had walking into the dressing room, because it's not really the Leroy Zanis or the Musialas, the younger guys that are, I think, the concern. I think when you walk in, he's probably thinking deep down, well, what do the Müllers and Lewandowskis and Manuel Neuers think of me, you know, as a 34-year-old? What are they thinking? And I think you've always got to get over that barrier because you are so young. But these guys are so professional, I'm sure that wasn't an issue. But in his mind, I think, you know, that was probably a big step for him because, you know, he's dealing with good players at RB Leipzig, but he's dealing with some of the great players here. And so that's the first hurdle he's got to go over. But ultimately, it'll come down to what squad he's got, and if he doesn't get stitched up by the hierarchy in terms of transfers at Bayern Munich, because every Bayern Munich coach in recent years has had a good backing from the Rummenigges and Salihamidzic and others, and have been able to build a good side. We know they've sold some or got rid of some experienced players, and it's not a brilliant Bayern squad by the recent standards, but it's still a good one.
I think the fact that he's 34 won't come into it with the older players, because they won't think of him as being 34. They'll think of him as coaching Hoffenheim, coaching Leipzig, and now he's here. I don't think the age will come into it whatsoever.
It was Hansi Flick who departed the role. He is now the Germany boss, and he was in action with Germany against Liechtenstein. That game finished 2-0, so it was a winning start for them. But as you can see in the Group J standings of World Cup qualifying, they are still behind Armenia. What did you make of Germany, Jan, in this game?
Well, there was a lot of expectation because with Joachim Löw at the end, it got a bit boring, not so exciting, not a lot of joy. And then I thought, when we get Hansi Flick coming from Bayern, we play in Liechtenstein, it could be a perfect start for them. But this was a sleeping kind of game. The good thing for Germany and Hansi Flick was it the two problem kids in his team. We see Leroy Sané here giving them a goal, and also Timo Werner. So that was a good day for them, but it will take some time for them to get it going again. He will look for the Bayern team. He will take a lot of players from them. But in the general, the German press, they were so expecting now a new kind of Germany winning 6-7-0. But this was like a slow, sleepy 2-0 win, and it's an easy group, so they should be okay going through. But I think all for Hansi Flick, how we will do in Doha, in Qatar, in December next year.
Yeah, obviously, the proof will be in the pudding then.
Well, Germany are back.
They might well be. This could be the crew joining me is Jan, Craig and also Stevie. They'll be with us for extra time answering your questions, so make sure you join us for that. You can always catch it on YouTube as well. Subscribe to ESPN FC for that. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A whole slate of World Cup qualifiers available on Saturday across the network on ESPN. Look out for Ukraine taking on France. Netherlands, Montenegro also available on ESPN Plus and definitely one worth watching. In CONMEBOL qualifying, Argentina had a 3-1 win over Venezuela. Lautaro Martinez, Joaquin Correa and Angel Correa with the goals in this game. Argentina are second in the 10-team South American qualifying group for next year's World Cup. They are behind Brazil, and here the top 14 will qualify automatically for Qatar. The fifth goes into an inter-regional playoff. For more on this game, here's Seven Herc.
Herc, Argentina 3-1 winners over Venezuela last night in CONMEBOL qualifying, where they right now sit second, very comfortable. Looks like we won't have a repeat of the last qualifying cycle, where we had to wait to the last minute to see if Lionel Messi would be at the World Cup. So with that in mind, assuming Argentina will indeed be in Qatar, from what we've seen so far in qualifying and also what we saw at the Copa America over the summer, is this Argentina with Lionel Messi good enough in your mind to win the World Cup in 2022?
Good enough, absolutely. I'm convinced of it. Look at this Copa America. Look at Scaloni and how difficult he's made Argentina to play against. It's very difficult to break this team down defensively. They only gave up 3 goals the whole tournament. Martinez was a beast in goal. You look at the spine, you have Otamendi, you've got Rodriguez, De Paul, you sprinkle in Lo Celso, Adi Maria, up top Lautaro Martinez, a very good player, and then the best player of all time, Lionel Messi, who's probably in his last dance. If we want to talk about opportunity, Lionel Messi 2014 did everything he could, got him to a World Cup final. They lost to Germany. The following World Cup, they bow out to France in the quarters. This is a team that 2 times has been on the cusp and lost to the eventual champion. This is the last chance for Messi. They just beat Brazil in Brazil for the first time, lifting a trophy after 30-something years. This has to be the last chance for Messi. It has to be one of the last chances for Argentina. This is a team that's very difficult to play against. And when you have a player like Lionel Messi, who literally knows that this is going to be his last opportunity, the greatest of all time, anything is possible. And especially if you think about the conditions in Qatar, I'm convinced that the European teams are going to have a rough go at it. I know Germany ended up winning in Brazil, but when you look at Qatar, the conditions, the weather, what it'll be like playing there, even training there, I think some of these European teams that in the Euros haven't shown me that much. I think a lot more questions than answers when it comes to a few teams like Belgium, like France, even Spain. Argentina has just as good a chance as anybody. I think the 2 biggest, I don't even want to call them dark horses, but favorites of mine are Brazil and Argentina. So yes, Argentina with Messi will always be a favorite.
It's all about Messi, Herc. They better keep him healthy. I don't know if you saw the challenge from Martinez in the game against Venezuela, but whew, that was as red as a red card could get.
That is very important, Tebby.
Yeah.
He's 34 years old. You've got to keep him healthy.
Yeah, how hard they are to beat. I think they got a 21-match unbeaten streak right now, Argentina, so they are really hard to beat. The only question would be, you can get through a Copa America doing that, holding on in the final after an early goal against Brazil. Can you do it in a World Cup, you know, against team after team from Europe where you're going to get overwhelmed? Maybe you could say like they did in 2018 against France where they just kind of got overrun. Can you hang your way to a World Cup final? I don't know, because that's really, you know, kind of how Argentina plays right now. Plenty more on how Argentina plays and a full wrap-up of what happened in the CONMEBOL qualifiers on our website. Tim Vickery with all the latest. Herc, elsewhere in qualifying, Mexico with a 2-1 win at the last moment in an empty Estadio Azteca last night against Jamaica thanks to a goal from Henry Martin. Let's judge this Mexican team, not on the result, because it's a win at home to start. Nothing else to say but got the job done. But on the performance, what did you think of how Mexico played against Jamaica, keeping in mind some pretty significant absences for both teams?
Yeah, I mean, more for Jamaica. They had 12 players that were missing. They gave
I don't know
fight,
about that.
But not really.
Those guys aren't as consolidated with the national team as the players for Mexico.
Right, Leon Bailey. You're right. You know, you're absolutely right. You're right. Mexico dominated like they usually do, Seb. Let's be honest. At home, they dominate, but they usually don't tend to get the actual result. It's always the same, right? We played like never before, but we lost like always. Or they somehow managed to not get the expected result. Well, that wasn't the case, but it happened in the almost 90th minute. Henry Martin, one of the bronze medalists for the Mexican national team in the Tokyo Olympics, it came in an unexpected way. It almost seems like this Mexican national team is turning the corner because it's never been about talent. It's almost been about that mentality, that being able to get over those humps. And they showed you last night. It was 1-1 towards the end. But that's not really what the game entailed. It was more of a Mexico dominance. They just
weren't very convincing in front of goal.
Look, I think it's a great performance if you consider all the players that were missing. You don't want to go through the Jamaican players. I will go through the Mexican players. No Raul Jimenez, no Chucky Lozano.
Why are you making excuses?
No Hector Herrera, no Tecatito, by the way, who they did think they were going to have, and no best option off your bench, which would have been Diego Lainez. I mean, that's not the cream of your European crop. That is your European crop. This was basically a domestic team for Mexico that was able to overcome Jamaica and get the job done.
12 players were missing for Jamaica.
It's also a great performance given the terrible summer that this Mexican team had. I mean, with all those players missing, with reports that Tata Martino is now going to be missing some of the future World Cup qualifiers with health issues, Mexico is in a very, very vulnerable spot coming into this game. So look, we have to say, it's not just a good result, it's a good performance. Quickly, Herc.
It is a good performance, Seb, and it's a great result. But put things into perspective. You could talk about all the Mexican players that were missing. That's still Mexico playing against Jamaica, minus 12 players at home. And if that empty stadium was anything, I actually think it helped the Mexican team because you didn't have that crowd on top of you, probably booing you and whistling you in the 90th minute. So if anything, it was a plus for them. But this is a Mexican team that's supposed to win at home, especially against a team like Jamaica missing 12 players.
Up next from Mexico, Sunday, away to Costa Rica. Up next for us, Herc, on Football Americas, Monday, new start time Monday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern time, 5:30 p.m. Pacific time. All right, that's it for us. Kay, back to you.
We'd like to thank you for joining us today on ESPN FC, and we'd like to ask you to join us for Extra Time. It's coming up next. We'll continue that conversation about sports that you hate to watch. Jan Agafyortov will be with us too. Stick around. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Hopefully no Boris Lander today, because I've got back off in the form of Jan Agafyortov. Also Craig Burley and Stevie Nicol here. So
we're not backing you up on Boris. No.
Please tread carefully.
Oh, I do.
I'm a little bit fragile after yesterday. All right, we'll start with you, Jan. Jan, do you think Haaland will join a team with Mbappe in it this early in his career? Or should he stay away from him as a rival so that they can push each other further like Messi and Ronaldo did?
Well, it's a part of the discussion now because everybody now, like after this amazing transfer window, they just start thinking of next summer when Mbappé and Haaland will be on the market. It's all about spaces. Where could they go? Yes, I can think that they could play together at Real Madrid. Benzema just extended his contract, didn't he? So they will have a famous three up front there again. But it's hard to see. But I can see the two of them play together. We remember the jokes going between them, or jokes when, in quotes, when they play Dortmund against PSG. So that could be a deadly duo.
Coast of Pardeshi asks, Craig, prime Hazard or prime Bale?
Wow. Hazard. Close.
Bale.
Yeah, just.
Divided panel there. All right. Stevie. Well,
Well, you're not interested in why?
Go on then, why?
Oh, it's too late now.
Yeah.
She wasn't even bothered before. Now. Oh, yeah.
Well, that's a difficult one, actually.
It seemed like Bale's was all about him. It was all like beat five players and score, whereas Hazard's known for setting his teammates up. So it seems Hazard was more of a team player, although what Bale did made his team better. Does that make sense?
Right.
Well, the one thing I would say is Bale made that big step to Real Madrid and, for the most part, performed.
Champions League.
Hazard has made that.
You're changing each other's minds.
You're right. I
just thought of that. Yeah. No, I was thinking about it because it's a good question. But they're both very good, both excellent players in the peak. But Bale made the big move to Real Madrid and delivered. Well, people will say, "Well, I didn't deliver." No.
I think he swung me.
Oh, so you're all Bale.
Swung me vote.
We're all Bale now.
Yeah. Yes.
If Hazard had gone into Real Madrid, fit
and done the same,
but then it's a different era. Well, let's just slander Borough instead.
No. Well, you might get a chance.
Hey, what's better, the Riverside or Ayrton Park?
Ayrton Park.
Riverside.
Oh, there. Even those two.
Yeah, but we know why Jan says that.
Ayrton Park. Are you serious?
It's the nostalgia.
Tell them you're not going to say it's a dive, are you?
It's not there anymore. It's a housing estate now.
Is it? Well, it's probably better off as a housing estate.
No, but I don't know. Are these, some of these new stadiums not just boring?
I mean, the Riverside is a beautiful stadium.
I don't mean it's not. I mean, the Emirates is nice, but they're a bit of a job lot, aren't they? Yeah.
But Kay, when I came to Middlesbrough and I went to Ayrton Park, so I played there also the last game there before we went to Riverside, and the first one I met in the dark corridors was Gordon McQueen. Can you believe it? I came there. I was at the time a record signing, and I went down on my knees because in the 70s I was so a big Leeds United fan, and when he went with Joe Jordan to Manchester United, I was crying. And the first one I met was Gordon McQueen, a legendary moment in the young fjord of life.
I was at that game as well, Jan, the last game there. I'm not going to ever post a picture of it because my hair was shocking.
Roker Park was another one.
Oh, you do that, Kay. We want that, Kay.
Roker Park was okay to play at. Ayrton Park was not. There was nothing enjoyable about playing at Roker Park.
At Ayrton Park? Well, that was the idea.
Ayrton Park, sorry.
That was the idea. We didn't want it to be enjoyable for you,
did we? What
about
the baseball ground?
Great place to play. Great place to play.
You didn't play at Pride Park, obviously.
No.
See, these old
baseball ground.
I've been in Pride Park. But if somebody put a
Highbury Emirates. See what I'm saying?
The only difference between
Highbury,
the Riverside and Pride Park and all these places, the only difference is the colour of the seats. He's talking about the baseball ground. If somebody dropped you in the middle of the baseball ground and never told you, you'd know exactly where you were. Same with Ayrton Park. Same with Roker Park. All these places were all unique. Now, the only difference between most of them is the colour of the seat. Because they all look the same.
It's a good point. So glad we have Fulham still around with their stadium.
Yep.
Yeah, but even that changed, didn't it? It got all the...
They're building a new stand. Or they have built a new stand that backs onto the Thames.
Yeah. I like sitting on the wooden bench.
This conversation.
Look, we've gone off on one now. Anyway, okay. Stevie.
The grounds.
Stevie, who would get a red card first, Graham Souness or Sergio Ramos?
Ooh.
Well, I've got to say Sergio Ramos. I was going to say Sergio Ramos. Well, the thing about Souness was, although everybody remembers all the tackles you see on YouTube where he just it's just assault. But he had so many tackles that were just smart. The referees wouldn't know that he was actually doing somebody. He would make it look like a 50-50 and the guy couldn't get up, but he would walk away. Whereas Ramos, to me, too many of his red cards are just they're so blatantly stupid, you know.
See, the difference for me is I didn't play with Graham, but I know him. Ramos's red cards and yellow cards or whatever were because of generally, I think, being in a bad position and trying to get himself out of it. Graham Souness's was because he'd already made his mind up. He was going to half somebody in two.
He was getting.
But also, boys, I mean, we have to think of the time, some tackles in the 70s and 80s.
Oh my God.
You had to rob a bank to be sent off. Unbelievable.
There wasn't any cameras as well. We played Stuyvesant, the semi-final of the Champions League, or the old European Cup. And their best player missed the second leg because he got his jaw broken in the first leg. And even the players on the field never saw Souness elbowing this guy in his jaw. I mean, everybody, the whole stadium, nobody saw it. The guy was just lying in a heap, and it turned out he broke his jaw. So
he had a tackle when he was player manager at Rangers. Well, he got sent off in his first game as player manager at Rangers. I believe it was at Hibs at Easter Road when he half somebody in two. But there's a challenge on YouTube for folks who want to go and watch it. When he was player manager at Rangers against, it might have been Steaua Bucharest against, but it was against a team in Europe when. It's funny, the ball's nowhere near and he just goes right over the top one legged and halves this guy in two and then turns to the referee as the most innocent man. I mean, you've got to go and
Stevie, I played with one of your teammates, Steve McMahon. He was my manager at Swindon, playing manager, and his first game for the team was Southend away.
And there was, after 10 minutes in the game, there was this thing and there was this guy falling over, and I went over to him. I wanted to say to the referee that the South End player was diving, and Steve McMahon said I didn't touch him. And then I looked down on the field and he's broken the player's nose. So it was not a dive.
Wow.
Oops, I'm watching it.
These guys are looking back at it.
This is brilliant. Is it?
What do they need to look out to look back for this, Craig?
Watch. Oh. Here it is.
Oh, they're using a phone now.
I know. I think, I tell you what, he did George McCluskey against Celtic.
That was George McCluskey.
George McCluskey. Awesome. He did Neil Simpson.
All right.
I tell you what, we'll be here for a while, Kim.
Yeah, we will. People at home need to know what to go and look up because
they
can't
see. Yeah, I'm trying to find it. It just says soon as tackle.
Put that in anyway. You'll
and
find
it's 24
plenty.
Seconds.
All right, Craig. I always hear that CONCACAF qualifying is so easy. What stories can you share about how difficult the matches away at Liechtenstein are?
Don't know, I've never played at Liechtenstein.
All right, well, some of the smaller teams in UEFA qualifying.
Smaller countries? They're only...
San Marino?
Yeah, they're only made difficult by you being poor, really. I mean, we went to... One of the tough places we went was Belarus. And the pitch was horrible and everything. It just made it for a bad game, but we did the job. Gary Mack scored the penalty. Bosh, job done, home with the 3 points.
Is it tougher than CONCACAF?
I've never played in CONCACAF.
What, do you think it's tougher than CONCACAF?
Yes.
But I think with the small nations, Kay, it's a big difference. There's some of these teams, they are so used to losing. So they're not going in there to win. They just go in there to defend, be good organized. Malta, for example, is a team that had a European qualifier. They lose 1 or 2-0, but they think it's okay. They want to win, of course, but they're not like they're losing it. And the same with Liechtenstein now. They get good organised now, and it's harder to break down as Germany saw the other night.
A lot of it's to do with your attitude. So, for example, I played in San Marino. And on the Saturday, I played at Anfield, the full house, against Manchester United. The atmosphere, the field, the whole thing was just incredible.
Yeah.
And then during the week, we go to San Marino. We're changing in makeshift dressing rooms.
Surprised you never pulled out of that one.
Changing makeshift dressing rooms. So you can't all go in at the same time. You know, you've got to wait till they bring all the kit in because it's not big enough. The stadium is actually surrounded by bleachers that you would get at a high school here. So sometimes it's just about your attitude. It's, you know, try to forget all that and think about... At the end of the day, it's a football field, it's green, the lines are white, the ball's round, it's 11 guys you're playing against. But it's not always dead easy to do that.
Of course.
Let me tell you, the US only had to go and play Trinidad and Tobago's
reserve.
We think it was the reserves. Shaka thinks it could be a hybrid of their second and third. And they couldn't do that. So it was nothing to do with pitches or conditions, which to do with performance.
El Salvador is difficult, though.
What?
El Salvador is difficult to go and get a result against.
Well, who is it?
It's grass for a start.
It's what?
The grass.
It's on grass.
All right, let's move on.
Okay.
Oh, you haven't seen
it. This is for you, Jan. Yeah. Steel Wing says, which team right now makes the guys say, man, I wish I could play with these guys, and why is it Borough?
I'm not sure that I would have played with Borough at the moment because I know the manager loves to swap the strikers all the time. He loves to give all strikers in the club a shift. But yeah, at the moment, I think I would have loved to play somewhere where they create a lot of chances, scoring a lot of goals. But okay, for you, I will always go back to Borough after the thing that happened to you with the Borough gate the other night.
Okay, so thanks. Let's just stay there and keep it on a Borough positive. Craig, Ben asks, as Derby Forest was just last weekend, what are your best memories of playing in the East Midlands Derby? As a Red, I must admit it was weird to see an ex-Ram correct Don's Notts Forest comment recently.
Well, that's an easy one for me to correct because I lived in Nottingham for almost 50 years. So, but yeah, no, I think I only played against them once because Forest, unfortunately, have been in the Championship for a long time. And at my time at Derby, we only dived into the Championship at the end. so for a few months or whatever it was. So, but yeah, more of a memory of playing Leicester, which is another East Midlands derby. But yeah, I had to. The Notts Forest thing is a no-no. It's Notts County, yeah. Steve's yeah. old club, and it's Nottingham Forest.
Yeah.
Not the first thing Don's had to be corrected on.
And it won't be the last.
Did you say Nottingham County?
No, he said Notts Forest.
Yeah.
Oh, Notts Forest, yeah. Right.
Which Nottingham Forest fans don't like.
Oh, we do miss Don, don't we?
Sorry. Oh, he's on his golf trip.
Don, who?
Oh, we've got a golf question coming up.
Don.
All right, Jerome asks you, Jan, as we've recently gotten a deep dive into TNT cuisine from Shaka Hislop, Jan Agafjartoft, what are some Norwegian delicacies?
We always have to go for the fish. I mean, the Scottish try to have their Scottish salmon, but sorry, that is silver medal. And forget the Canadian salmon. We have the best salmon in the world. So it is going to be
salmon.
Fish.
Norwegian salmon.
Yeah, Norwegian salmon. You haven't heard about that?
Yes.
You haven't heard about that?
No, I have not.
I have.
Oh, Stevie, you would come with a Norwegian wood or something for the Beatles, but is it Norwegian salmon?
Do you even eat fish, Stevie?
Yeah, but only of course I do.
Only if it's battered.
Correct.
You idiot. Right,
as long as you batter it.
Do you like... So you won't eat smoked salmon, will you? Smoked salmon is my favourite.
No.
Fantastic. It's good as well. It's good as well.
Fantastic. No, thank you.
All right, Craig. After Gab said on last night's Extra Time that golf is the saddest sport to watch, would you like to have a go at Gab? What sport do you guys hate to watch? So
no,
first of all,
I don't want to have a go at Gab.
Watching golf.
But play.
You don't mind watching
Gab's
golf?
Gab's not a golf fan, obviously. He's not a golfer. What sport do I hate to watch? Anything apart. So I watch golf, then I watch Stevie's favourite sport, which I know he loves, Formula One.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, there's my answer.
You
I was trying to figure out
why?
Which...
What is it, the noise?
Oh, he hates it.
Formula One.
What's interesting
great.
About it?
It's brilliant.
It's fantastic.
In Holland, all of it.
It's in Holland this
fantastic.
Weekend.
Fantastic. Yes,
I've never been to a Formula One race, right? And when you're there, maybe it's better because you're actually there and you can follow it. And
but you can't, it's the same thing on the TV.
Watching it on ESPN.
Oh, no.
Why can you follow it on the television? You can't.
You can follow
it's better.
Unless they tell you. Unless they tell you.
Unless they actually tell yeah. you what's going on.
I can watch
on.
It anytime on my ESPN app.
See,
it's wonderful.
Yeah.
For today,
I was going to say ice hockey.
I love the Formula 1.
I can't even see the
ice
puck.
Ice hockey.
I can't even follow the puck. The only, it's a good job they got a buzzer when it hits
it's
the back.
It's a good job that's on ESPN
and
too.
By the way, that tells you there's a reason why he's got a buzzer in the back of the net. Because nobody would have seen it going in.
Jan, what sport do you not like to watch?
I am a sport lover. I love Formula One. And like Craig said, it's a very exciting race now in Holland. Verstappen's home ground, Red Bull's home ground. But I would like to say that the first 2-3 years when I came to England, I thought cricket was the most boring sport I've ever seen in my life. And then I realized that the people around me loved it. And I learned some of the rules and I thought it was great to watch. So I'm a sport lover, Kay. So I can't say one that is very, very sad for me to watch.
Okay.
Hold on. For these two guys, right? So you tell me, what kind of sport is it when basically the best car wins? Regardless, you could stick a chimpanzee in the best car.
What if they crash?
And it would win.
What if they crash?
Chimpanzees are smart. But basically, how is that a sport
what if they get
when the best
the
car always wins a championship?
Because the best car has... The best team or the best car has two cars, at least. So there are two drivers in that team, so...
So that's a great sport. Well, you know who's going to win it, but you're just not quite sure which whether it's the
well,
first car.
Well, you don't know who's going to win it.
No, we don't. You know. No.
He doesn't like it.
He doesn't like it, and I don't think we're going to convince him.
So I think that's brilliant. IndyCar as well. In a minute, I follow a bit of IndyCar in the States.
Craig likes it
IndyCar.
All.
I don't. Equestrian. Is that a sport? Freaking hate it.
Yeah, you don't like
what? Horse jumping.
What about this? Well, we are discussing what's the saddest part sport to watch, and Stevie starts about ice hockey where he can't see. I mean, what sport? If 5 years time, Stevie can't see football. He can't see the ball.
No, you're wrong. I went and saw ice hockey before I had glasses. And I still couldn't follow it.
They say the rules are very similar to football. No?
It doesn't matter what the rules are. If you can't see what you're playing with, it doesn't mean it really make any difference.
All right, let's go on to this one. You can all answer this. Right, Stevie, did you take more pride playing for your country or your club?
Oh, do you want me to give you the answer?
I think we know.
That's not real. That's an unfair question.
Why?
Because he never pulled out of any Scotland squad. No, because
you just wanted to play on the successful side.
My first cap, I'll never forget standing in front of 100 pipers and they're playing Scotland the Brave. Never forget it ever. It was as good as anything else that ever happened to me. So that's an unfair question.
See, I didn't have that lot. I didn't, you know how I didn't have the pipers playing? Do you know why?
Because they changed it.
No.
Had some singer, probably.
No, because I made my debut in Hiroshima. Now.
Oh.
And they couldn't find a record of it. I'm guessing.
In Japan. You're looking at me like...
Yeah, I am.
Why, is it wrong to make your debut in Japan?
No, not at all. I'm just interested in the story.
So that's the answer,
though. There was no bagpipes there.
Okay. But I don't think he's kind of avoided saying, where did you have more pride then? Obviously, that made you feel amazing.
Well, it's not... How can you put one ahead of the other? Is it not possible to have just as much pride for both? Is that not possible?
Well, you can tell us.
You can ask a question and say, oh, do you like...
Everything's got to be black or
red,
white.
Do you like red better than blue? Or... The fact is, you can't beat, and you could never replicate that night, me standing in my first cap at Hampden Park in front of 100 pipers.
Do you have an answer, Craig?
What?
More pride for the club.
I ditto.
All right. Jan?
No, I would say because I don't think you can compare that because Stephen Nicol played for for a long, long time for one club. And I played in four different countries with a lot of clubs. I was very proud to play for those clubs. But I think the key word here is pride. And I think that the biggest thing you can achieve is to represent your country. And the national anthem, and I 100% agree with Stevie. I mean, the proudest moment in my life, my caps. And I think that, yes, I love to play my clubs. I follow my clubs. But I think the key word here is pride. Pride.
I think it's just different. There's no other way to describe it. It's different. One you're doing it day in, day out, and the other you pitch along to represent your country, and that's what you thought about doing when you were a little boy or a little girl.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's a pressure on you for that period of time, and then you go back to your club and you do it comes naturally to you.
Right.
It's just different.
It's a different feeling. Craig, what annoys you most?
How long have we got?
Pundits who call managers by their first name are pundits who are blatantly biased towards their old team and teammates.
Good questions.
Well, it's none of my business, really.
Well, you got a little bit annoyed the other day with the Ronaldo outpouring from some ex-United players.
Well, I think some of those ex-United ones seem particularly bad because they are prominent in the media at the moment. But anyway, it's none of my business. If that's the way they want to do it, and people want to do it, that's their own business. I don't personally myself like calling all the managers by their first names. I don't.
So the second one was, or the first one was?
The first one's worse, then.
You think the first one's worse?
No, second.
Second? Second. Yeah, second for you as well, Steve.
Yeah, because it's part of your job as a pundit, is regardless of where your allegiances were, to be honest about it.
Well, how come Dan Thomas called you Liverpool TV the other night on the transfer deadline day special?
Well, because he didn't like what I was saying.
Right.
That doesn't make him right. Because you know he was wrong, completely.
Oh, I don't have an opinion on this.
Oh, I mean, the good thing is that Craig was watching the transfer deadline day special because he actually watches the content that we have here.
Well, what happened was I stumbled across it on ESPN Plus, and there you were, all those pundits in their glory having an argument or a debate. So I thought, I've got nothing else to do. I'll have 20 minutes of this.
Well, plus,
and then he got upset with Dan. Standard.
Yeah, but then plus what you got to remember as well is Dan's there to throw little hand grenades in. Just throw the plug and try and annoy you. Just to wind you up.
But nobody does it better than Mr. Thomas.
No.
Well, he's pretty good at it.
He's very good at it.
Little man syndrome.
Ah, Dad'll be back tomorrow anyway.
I mean, where have we put all the cushions? He sits on behind the. All right.
He can defend himself on tomorrow. Shall go on, Jan. Final word.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about it, but it's an interesting question that with former pundits, because I went to Germany when I was allowed to travel again. I stayed in Germany for 10 days. I met Dortmund. I met Bayern Munich. And what Dortmund got a problem with, and sometimes I guess some clubs in England will have a problem with as well, that in Germany, more or less all the pundits, like Lothar Matthäus, Didi Hamann, Owen Hargreaves, all these pundits are former Bayern Munich players. And like Dortmund, they don't have anyone, no one they feel can defend them. Bild Zeitung, the head of sport there is Christian Falk, and his name on Twitter is CF Bayern. So it is a thing that the clubs are discussing all the time. So I think it is a good question.
By the way, some good questions today, weren't
they? We did, we had some
which makes
questions.
A nice yeah. change, because they're not, whenever I'm on, they're always guff.
Listen, you guys at home all need to take that as a huge compliment. Craig Burley,
yeah. I'm assuming anybody watching this has never heard the word guff before. It's a very Scottish word.
He says it quite a lot.
Guff. It's a Scottish word.
I don't say it quite a lot.
It is.
I say it because my options are limited for broadcasting purposes.
But we do like guff. And your questions weren't guff today, so thanks so much for them. And thanks so much for being a part.
Back to the normal guff next week.
Yeah, of today's extra time. ESPN FC available 7 days a week. No guff questions on extra time, please.
Guff for a while. Absolute guff. I'm guff.